TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. To the memory of Chernobyl, consequences of the catastrophe for people and the environment. This rebroadcast is dedicated to the growing movement to close down nuclear power plants. This is the third of four programs on the consequences of the explosion of the nuclear reactor at Chernobyl in the former Soviet Union. The 25th anniversary in 2011 was intended to be the date to close the files on Chernobyl. Only 5 years after the catastrophe, the Soviet Union collapsed, and the most seriously contaminated areas, Belarus and the Ukraine, became independent. Russia has already begun reducing or cutting off medical support and pensions to the survivors among the over 800,000 so-called liquidators. They were the army conscripts and volunteers who extinguished the burning reactor, buried radioactive waste, and built the sarcophagus over the ruins of the reactor, a structure that already needs to be replaced at great cost. Russia wants Chernobyl to be forgotten and proposes to sell 2 nuclear reactors to Belarus. But Russia isn't the only one that wants to move forward. Powerful forces from the nuclear industry to all pertinent branches of the United Nations, from IAEA to the WHO, who are obligated by a 1959 agreement to promote nuclear power, and to the many governments of the world that support the nuclear industry, foremost the U.S. Obama administration, all have positioned themselves to write Chernobyl off. Then came Fukushima, and the whole world paid attention again, as it should. Nuclear power accidents release many more times the amount of radioactive material than the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The entire bombs dropped on Japan weighed about 5 tons each. The reactor at Chernobyl spewed out a large portion of its 180-ton inventory. According to TEPCO and Associated Press, Fukushima held about 4,000 tons of active and spent fuel at the time of the accident. Given that no human being can approach the destroyed reactors and fuel pools for years, and even famous robots have a hard time simply opening a door, it remains to be seen how much of that inventory will disperse before it gets contained. The book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, is written by Alexei Yablokov and Vasily and Alexei Nestorenko. Yablokov is a prominent Russian scientist, environmentalist, former member of the Soviet Union Parliament, and environmental advisor to the Gorbachev administration. Vasily Nestorenko was director of the Institute of Nuclear Energy at the National Academy of Sciences of Belarus. He was one of the great heroes of the Chernobyl catastrophe. He flew over the burning reactor and took the only radioactive measurements. He also dropped liquid nitrogen from a helicopter on the burning reactor core. Despite the heavy radioactive contamination of the area, Nestorenko survived initially. However, of the 4 passengers of his helicopter, 3 died from radioactive irradiation. The accident changed Nestorenko's life. He left the nuclear establishment and dedicated his life to helping children in the aftermath of the accident. Since 1990, he had been the director of BELRAD, created in 1989 with the help of Andrei Sakharov. The State Security Agency of Belarus threatened Nestorenko with internment in a psychiatric asylum unless he stopped his work on Chernobyl. Nestorenko, not to be intimidated, continued his work. He died in August 2009. Yablokov and Nestorenko undertook the enormous task of collecting over 1,000 titles and more than 5,000 printed and internet publications that reflect the impact of radiation, not just on the health of human beings, but on the whole ecosystem. They created a body of work ignored by the IAEA and WHO. This radio program is a report on and reading from that book, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. In part one, you heard about the documented distribution of radionuclides from Chernobyl throughout the Northern Hemisphere, showing that, as the authors say, quote, there is a greater danger than nuclear weapons concealed within nuclear power. Emissions from this one reactor contaminated half the globe. No citizen of any country can be assured that he or she can be protected from radioactive contamination. End quote. And depending on the half-life of the 200-plus isotopes from a nuclear catastrophe, that contamination can last from a few hundred to an unfathomable million years. Today's program presents the consequences of the Chernobyl explosion on the environment. How has the radiation affected and continues to affect air, water, the soil, plants and animals? The forbidden 30-kilometer zone around the Chernobyl reactor and the contaminated lands of Belarus and the Ukraine and Western Russia are the world's first testing ground, a real-life experiment nobody would dare to undertake on purpose, on the impact of chronic, ongoing radiation on life. As in the area of health and documented spread of radiation, this chapter on the environment contains abstracts of many dozens of studies that you can look up on the free PDF file on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Every single statement made in the book and quoted in this reading is given a source and date in a scientific paper. The most common radioactive isotopes discovered in water, air, plants and animals, and in human food are cesium-137, around for 300 years, americium-241, around for 4,580 years, strontium-90, 280 years, iodine-131, 80 days, plutonium-239 and 240, around for 243,000 and 65,000 years, respectively. Here's the introduction by Alexei Yablokov and Vasily and Alexei Nestorenko to Chapter 3, Consequences of the Chernobyl Catastrophe for the Environment. The level of radioactivity in the atmosphere, water, and soil in the contaminated territories will determine the eventual level of radiation of all living things, both directly and via the food chain. Patterns of radioactive contamination essentially change when the radionuclides are transferred by water, wind, and migrating animals. Land and bodies of water that were exposed to little or no contamination can become much more contaminated owing to secondary transfer. Many Russian-language publications have documented such radionuclide transfers, as well as changes in concentration and bioaccumulation in soil and water affecting various animals and plants. We emphasize that, like the consequences for public health, which are not declining but rather increasing in scope and severity, the consequences for nature are neither fully documented nor completely understood and may also not decline. Cesium-137 is removed from ecological food chains 100 times more slowly than was predicted right after the catastrophe. Strontium-90 and americium-241 are moving through the food chains much faster than predicted because they are so water-soluble. Chernobyl radioactive contamination has adversely affected all biological as well as non-living components of the environment, the atmosphere, surface, groundwaters, and soil. That was the introduction from the chapter Consequences of the Chernobyl Catastrophe for the Environment. The first segment in this chapter deals with air, water, and soil. Here is what they write. Air particulate activity over all of the Northern Hemisphere reached its highest levels since the termination of nuclear weapons testing, sometimes up to 1 million times higher than before the Chernobyl contamination. There were essential changes in the ionic, aerosol, and gas structure of the surface air in the heavily contaminated territories, as measured by electroconductivity and air radiolysis. Many years after the accident, aerosols from forest fires have dispersed hundreds of kilometers away. And there's an example given of a particular fire. Quote, in 1992, there were raging forest fires over all of Belarus. The hot air resulting from the fires caused radionuclides to be carried up to a height of 3 kilometers and transported over hundreds of kilometers. That's from a 2006 study. And back to the introduction of the chapter. The Chernobyl radionuclides concentrate in sediments, water, plants, and animals, sometimes 100,000 times more than the local background level. The consequences of such a shock on aquatic ecosystems is largely unclear. Secondary contamination of freshwater ecosystems occurs as a result of cesium-137 and strontium-90 washout by the high waters of spring. The speed of vertical migration of different radionuclides in floodplains, lowland moors, peat bogs, etc., is about 2 to 4 centimeters a year. As a result of this vertical migration of radionuclides in soil, plants with deep root systems absorb them and carry the ones that are buried to the surface again. This transfer is one of the important mechanisms observed in recent years that leads to increased doses of internal irradiation among people and animals in the contaminated territories. The next segment is on the impact on plants. Here's the introduction by Alexei Yablokov. Plants and mushrooms accumulate the Chernobyl radionuclides at a level that depends on the soil, the climate, the particular biosphere, the season, spotty radioactive contamination, and the particular species and population. Chernobyl irradiation has caused structural anomalies and tumor-like changes in many plant species. Unique pathological complexes are seen in the Chernobyl zone, such as a high percentage of anomalous pollen grains and spores. Chernobyl's irradiation has led to genetic disorders, sometimes continuing for many years, and it appears that it has awakened genes that have been silent over long evolutionary time. That last remark I find extra scary. Back to the text. There are thousands of papers about agricultural, medicinal, and other plants and mushrooms contaminated after the Chernobyl catastrophe. There's also an extensive body of literature on genetic, morphological, and other changes in plants caused by Chernobyl radiation. Another worrisome aspect is the contamination and morphological changes in crops that are so important for human survival. The Ukraine was once the breadbasket of the Soviet Union. Now you can look at studies on winter wheat, rye, and barley. You can find that on page 246. That shows tumors and genetic changes in these essential grains observed in the Ukraine and Belarus and Western Russia. The next segment shows the effects on animals, both wild and domestic. Here's the introduction. Chernobyl's Radioactive Impact on Fauna by Alexei Yablokov. The radioactive shock when the Chernobyl reactor exploded in 1986, combined with chronic low-dose contamination, has resulted in morphologic, physiologic, and genetic disorders in every animal species that has been studied: mammals, birds, amphibians, fish, and invertebrates. The Chernobyl catastrophe has impacted on fauna and will continue to have an impact for many decades to come, with effects ranging from changes in population vitality to abnormal reproductive and genetic disorders. It is well to remember that Homo sapiens are a part of the animal kingdom and suffer the same kinds of health consequences that are observed in animals. And here are a few examples of animal studies quoted in this text. During the autumn in Ukraine, the level of cesium-137 accumulation in mice species and the internal organs of fawns increased 11-fold. The greatest contamination in fawns was due to grazing on aspen, oak, bilberry, and heather. And another study: decrease in cesium-137 concentration in cattle in the contaminated territories is occurring more slowly than was predicted by all of the IAEA models. That's a 97 study. Here's a study of 44 bird species in the Chernobyl 5-kilometer zone from 2003 to 2005. The studies revealed that the greatest contamination was present during nesting and hatching. Females accumulate more strontium-90 than males, and nestlings and juveniles accumulate more than females. And on page 259, possibly the most terrible science experiment, the Chernobyl nuclear power plant had a cooler reservoir which was stocked with catfish, and the catfish is surviving. The study says from 1987 to 2002, the amount of cesium-137 in catfish in the Chernobyl nuclear power plant cooler reservoir increased from 1,140 to 6,500 becquerels per kilogram. And a last small bit of information that poses sort of an open question on the same page. Several hours after the catastrophe, honey in Germany was heavily contaminated with iodine-131. That's a 1988 study. If you go to the PDF file of the book I'm quoting from, Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment, you can find that on tucradio.org, among other places. You can find studies on wolves and ducks, barn swallows, wild boar, roe deer, carps and catfish, cows, sheep, and goats, all showing to different degrees how animals, even more so than plants, tend to bioconcentrate radioactive isotopes. Here's the conclusion of the chapter. In 1986, in the contaminated territories, an enormous amount of many different radionuclides was absorbed by animals through food, water, and air. Levels of incorporated radionuclides were sometimes hundreds of times higher than pre-catastrophe ones. Now, 23 years later, the levels of incorporated radionuclides in some areas of Europe remain dangerous for mammals, birds, amphibians, and fish. The first radioactive shock, together with chronic low-dose contamination, has resulted in morphologic, physiologic, and genetic disorders in all of the animals studied: mammals, birds, amphibians, fish, and invertebrates. Chernobyl populations exhibit a wide variety of morphological deformities that are not found in normal populations of domestic animals. Some bird species may persist in the 30-kilometer Chernobyl zone only via immigration from uncontaminated areas. Since the catastrophe, long-term observations of both wild and experimental animal populations in the heavily contaminated areas show serious increases in morbidity and mortality that bear striking resemblance to changes in the public health of humans. I'm skipping over a chapter on how radiation has affected soil microbes, viruses, herpes, tuberculosis, bacteria such as E. coli, not because I find it unimportant, but because it's a little too technical to read. But I encourage you to read the segment beginning on page 281 from the PDF file on tucradio.org. Here's just the introduction by Alexei Yablokov. Chernobyl's radioactive impact on microbial biota. Of the few microorganisms that have been studied, all underwent rapid changes in the areas heavily contaminated by Chernobyl. Organisms such as tuberculosis bacilli, hepatitis, herpes, and tobacco mosaic viruses, and soil micromycetes, and bacteria were activated in various ways. The ultimate long-term consequences for the Chernobyl microbiologic biota may be worse than what we know today. Compared to humans and other mammals, the profound changes that take place among these small live organisms with rapid reproductive turnover do not bode well for the health and survival of other species. 1 gram of soil contains some 2.5 billion microorganisms. Up to 3 kilograms of the mass of an adult human body is made up of bacteria, viruses, and microfungi. In spite of the fact that these present such important and fundamentally live ecosystems, there are only scarce data on the various microbiological consequences of the Chernobyl catastrophe. And in spite of that disclaimer, he goes on to list quite a few. And I'm concluding this book report with the first 3 paragraphs of the ending of the chapter on how Chernobyl radiation has affected soil, air, and water, animals, and plants. The 1986 radioactive fallout from Chernobyl impacted fauna and flora over the entire Northern Hemisphere. Elevated radiation levels were documented in plants and animals, including microorganisms, in Western Europe, North America, the Arctic, and East Asia, and the levels were often hundreds of times higher than previous background levels that were considered normal. This huge outpouring of high-level radioactivity, together with the ensuing low-level chronic irradiation, resulted in morphologic, physiologic, and genetic disorders in all living organisms, plants, mammals, birds, amphibians, fish, invertebrates, and bacteria, as well as viruses. Without exception, adverse effects were evident in all the plants and animals that were studied. Affected populations exhibited a wide variety of morphological deformities that were extremely rare or not known before the catastrophe. 20-plus years later, game animals and livestock in some Chernobyl-contaminated areas far from Ukraine continue to have dangerous levels of absorbed radionuclides. Chernobyl's overall radioactive effect on water, atmosphere, and soil is dynamic from both the radionuclide decay transformations as well as from biologic, geologic, chemical, and other ecological processes such as migration and accumulation of radionuclides throughout the ecosystem, including introduction into multiple food chains. The active migration of strontium-90, cesium-137, plutonium, americium, and other isotopes results in bioaccumulation that will present unforeseen surprises for decades to centuries to come. That was a reading from Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. The lead author is Dr. Alexei Yablokov. He's a corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Science and currently serves as Nuclear and Radiation Safety Program Chair for the International Socio-Ecological Union. This book was nearly completed when the other lead author, Vasily Nestorenko, passed away in August 2008. Nestorenko had given up his bright career as nuclear design engineer to dedicate his life to protecting humankind from Chernobyl's radioactive danger. He was one of the great heroes of the Chernobyl catastrophe. He flew over the burning reactor and took the only radioactive measurements. With the help of the U.S. editor and medical doctor Jeanette Sherman, the book was published in 2009 in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences and promptly ignored. However, the authors and editor are now, as of April 2011, offering the book for free as PDF file, and they're placing a new print run back into circulation. This is essential information for all of us who want to make sense of the Fukushima disaster and make an informed decision as to what to do about nuclear power and the so-called nuclear renaissance. So come back for the next broadcast, order the book, or download the PDF file via a link on TUC Radio's website. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. TUC Radio takes its name from an aeronautical term. Time of useful consciousness is the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness, the brief moment in which a pilot may save the plane. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.